Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Did I tell you I'm on a fitness kick? I was on it last week as well.
Good for you.
So I don't know whether I told you this. So, and do you want to know the funniest part of it all?
Yes.
Guess who's inspired me to do this?
Patti LuPone. Default answer.
No. No. Tyler Oakley. Welcome to Jim and Tomek's Musical Theatre Happy Hour. I said that very sincerely.
You did.
Like,
how dare you be sincere in this podcast?
Quite odd. Anyway, your weekly podcast with shakes and shenanigans.
I do enjoy that shakes could be either a drink or a dance move.
I got the shakes.
Or a symptom.
Yep. God, I do love a milkshake.
Oh, man. Have you ever... I only recently went to a Shake Shack. Are you aware of the existence of Shake Shack?
I have dined in the, I think it was JFK Airport Shake Shack.
All right.
I had the chicken burger.
Congratulations.
And it was disappointing, but
Did you have a milkshake?
No. It was so expensive.
Well, it was decidedly underwhelming. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah. But a chocolate frosty from Wendy's.
Yeah.
Hi. Anyway, what are you drinking today?
A chocolate frosty from Wendy's.
That makes sense.
Right? No. No, it doesn't. No, I'm drinking the water from Aphrodite.
Ooh. That has been underground for a long, long time.
Ooh, I know, right?
That will be silty.
It's so gross. It's like when you see the sprinklers go off in a building and it's all that like black sooty water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know why they dance around in
it. You're drinking that. Why are you drinking that?
That's probably why they all get all slow motion and drugged out. Just because filled with like arsenic
and
hallucinogens.
Yeah. Well, I'm drinking ouzo.
Ouzo?
Opa.
Ah, so, this is a Greek thing.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever had ouzo?
I have not. Is it good?
Oh, no. It's just pure alcohol. It's like rubbing off. Do you know what I mean? Like, so this isn't a... So, see when alcohol gets to that percentage, right? I think ouzo's it's high.
Yeah.
How do you tell the difference? It all just... burns
and
it all
just tastes
hellish.
Like burning. Yeah.
It's you don't...
It's like moonshine. Do you have moonshine? We only have moonshine because we have country.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can buy it. I don't know how authentic it is. It's not like a toothless old man behind shed.
Why is he behind the shed? Why not make it...
Is it not illegal?
Depends on if you have a license or not.
Oh, okay, fair. Well, this guy definitely does not.
That's why he's behind the shed.
Yeah, he's behind the shed, so... Oh. Yep.
What? We've lost the plot. Yeah. Do you want a quiz statement?
Exactly. I do. Just get it back on track.
This musical shares its poster title font with Nirvana's album covers.
That's a strange question. But people got it. So
which was amazing.
It's so gay.
It was one of those, like, I never would have thought about it, but the moment I looked at it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's totally right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. And that musical is, of course, Mamma Mia!
Show again, my, just how much I missed you. Yeah, I've been broken hearted.
I like how you said it with a question mark.
Yeah. Was that a question mark? Mamma Mia.
It was, yeah, it was in the middle of Mia. Mamma Mia, and then
Yeah, anyway. So, we have entered the world of the jukebox musical. We've put it off as long as we possibly could.
Why are we doing this?
And here we are. Because it needs to be done. It's a hot topic.
Hi, it is. The movie's coming out, just came out. Is it out, the Mamma Mia 2, Electric Boogaloo?
To yesterday?
Yeah.
Today?
I think it releases...
Tomorrow is tomorrow. Or
and
some
I think
point.
It's like
know.
Saturday where we are at.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to go see it, actually.
I think, as will I. Okay, so Mamma Mia, music and lyrics. I wanted you to say this. Oh, well. by Benny Anderson and Bjorn Ulvaeus
and book
of ABBA fame.
Okay, ABBA.
Oh, for goodness sake. We have only one way of saying it. I don't know why we're saying it. ABBA. The sound is ABBA.
But you see, that sounds like both of them to me.
What?
It's like
I can't say two things at once.
Like Lonnie and the
ABBA.
Other one.
Oh yeah.
What do you hear? What do you hear? ABBA or ABBA?
I mean, it's ah. Say ah.
Ah. See, I have a wider ah than you, right?
Yeah. How would you say musical theater MASH?
Musical theater MASH. But I have
ABBA.
I have the Chicago A. ABBA, right? Which is incorrect.
Yeah, say that.
And I'll, ABBA.
That.
All right, I'll say ABBA.
Yeah. Goodness gracious.
And book by Katherine Johnson, who's not from ABBA.
She's not from ABBA. You can't keep saying ABBA. You can't. It's going to be a long podcast. Anyway, it's obviously musical lyrics by Benny and Bjorn because it is based on the songs by ABBA
of their career.
So it opened up on the West End in 1999
and it is still playing. I think it's eight,
still there,
seventh in the longest running West End shows.
It is the seventh longest running West End show that is still open,
and it's still got to play for like three more years before it's going to catch up with Cats. But it's getting there, and Cats.
Think it 100% will.
Cats is one of the few it can kick off the list. And then Blood Brothers, but everything else is still open.
A long, long time. See it right now.
And it opened on Broadway in 2001, and ran for like 5,000 performances, and is the ninth longest running Broadway show. The longest running jukebox musical in Broadway history.
It is.
Which also, maybe like also one of the first Broadway musicals, and that seems like an unfair statistic to count.
That what?
That it's the longest running jukebox musical on Broadway, because it was also maybe the first jukebox musical on Broadway. It kind of pioneered the art form.
Yeah, it was the first that was like, wow, this is a thing that makes a lot of money.
Yeah, and kind of opened the floodgates, unfortunately.
Yes. So there had been others, but this was the one that was like, interesting.
Yeah.
We will 100% be
discussing. Think like that coined the term. Super popular.
Yep.
Developed into or adapted into a movie with Meryl Streep and Pierce Brosnan and Christine Baranski and a bunch of other people. And the sequel to the movie releases now.
With Cher!
With Cher. How did this happen? Did you see...
Okay.
Have you seen the photo of Cher and Meryl Streep kissing on the red carpet?
Yes. Because they're the best.
I enjoy all of the gay memes that have spawned out of it. And it's like two gay camps have suddenly collided and no one knows what to do about it anymore.
It's just exquisite. Just before we move on, because I don't know how much we'll talk about Cher, but have you ever listened to My Dad Wrote a Porno?
I have, the podcast.
You think Cher in this movie 100% is the Duchess?
Oh, it's been a long time since I've ever listened to my dad.
So the Duchess was the one who... Belinda was at the auction. The Duchess was the one who bought her at the auction, brought her in the horse box, hosed her down,
For people who have never listened to My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Don't you dare give them context. They don't deserve it because they've not listened.
That's true. They should go listen to it.
It's why podcasts were invented.
To be listened to. I will now, as whenever I listen to My Dad Wrote a Porno, picture share.
Please do, because that will change everything. Because originally in my head it was Helen Mirren. Uh-huh. Now it's going to be Cher and Mamma Mia, Here
what
We Go Again.
Interesting. I wonder how often Helen Mirren has been replaced with Cher.
Probably more times than you think, Tom.
Probably more times than Helen Mirren wants to admit.
I'm just going to fly out some fun statistics right in your face about just how successful Mamma Mia is. Mamma Mia has been seen by over 30 million people around the world. Mm-hmm. Each and every night, 17,000 people around the world get to watch it live on stage, because it's everywhere. It was something like the first show in Russia to perform for 7 days. Like, not like as a whole, but as in like as a week.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, it's crazy how successful
it has
been.
Productions on, like, one of the Royal Caribbean boats, like, just.
And that's the thing. Like, I think I don't know if I'm pulling a statistic out of my butt, but I think it is like the most performed. Musical. I don't think there's any other show that has as many productions,
as many performances
going. Well, certainly going at once.
And didn't the movie break a bunch of film records in the UK?
It is Meryl Streep's most successful movie.
I'm gonna sigh a lot through this podcast. And it is the fifth highest grossing film of 2008. This piece, how is this so popular? Anyway,
it's crazy. That's what we'll be picking apart as we go through. So tell us about what happens.
God, there's no plot in this show. No, it takes place on a fictional Greek.
A plot.
There's barely a plot. It takes place on a fictional Greek island. 20-year-old Sophie is getting ready to get married and doesn't quite know who her dad is, and had surreptitiously discovered her mother's diary, and discovered that it's one of three men: Sam, Bill, or Harry. And so, without telling her mother, she invites all three of them to the wedding with hopes of finding out who her father is so that he could take her down the aisle, and hilarity and disco music ensues.
Absolutely. It's gonna be one of those.
God, I didn't think you were gonna like this show as much.
We'll talk about why I like it.
Okay.
We'll talk about why I like it. It's good. We're not gonna talk about that first, though.
Okay.
Before we find out why
my head explodes.
Yes, again. Do you like musicals? I don't think so.
I don't. Not when they're like this.
Before we get there, let's go way, way back to the 70s.
Yes.
And we'll talk about the origin story of Mamma Mia. Tommy, Have you ever watched the Eurovision Song Contest?
I have seen bits and pieces of the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh, but you've never watched it in its entirety.
I've never watched it in its entirety because it sounds like it's an ordeal. Like, watching the Tonys is enough of an ordeal, and that's about as much of an attention span I have.
It's different because it's so European.
To an American, what is the Eurovision Song Contest?
Okay, so the Eurovision Song Contest is like a celebration of European music. Well, European and beyond, because also hashtag Israel, hashtag Australia, hashtag Russia. So Europe and beyond, a celebration of the music and the culture and, you know, artistry.
Okay.
All brought together in one very drunken night with a lot of camp and glitter and glitz.
Is it? And it's a competition, right?
It is, yes. So basically, and I think this has only happened recently, their acts will present themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get through to a semi-final.
Okay.
I think similar to the World Cup, like, the countries have to qualify.
Okay. By playing soccer.
By playing soccer, yeah. Just a nice mash of the two. But no, I think so the countries have to qualify to get onto the final.
Okay.
And so the Eurovision Song Contest show is the final.
The final. And then is it like a public vote? Like, call in now to place
it
your...
It is. And that's like one of the most exciting bits about it. So every country gets to offer 12 points, 10 points... And then 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I think.
Okay. And so each country gets to place their votes. That was my question.
Yes. And that doesn't just mean only the countries there. It's all the countries eligible.
Got it. But that balances for population imbalances in these countries. Because otherwise,
yes,
you'd just have a mess. Like, whoever has the biggest population would win.
Exactly. Exactly. But still... Mm-hmm. It's just 100% politics. So, for example, like, you know for a fact that Spain will always give Portugal their 12 points.
Okay.
Or, I'm trying to think, like, I'm trying to think of another good relation. I can't. Normally, yeah, like, the Scandi countries will give each other high scores.
Okay.
Regardless of their act.
Right. There's a lot of neighborhoodism about it.
Exactly. And nobody really wants to give the UK anything.
Sounds about
whether
right.
Whether we deserve it or not.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because sometimes we'll have really good acts performing. Sometimes we won't. Deserve for them, but it's a shame for the ones that really, really, really try. But it's just great. Graham Norton commentates it for us.
Fun.
And he's always gets really drunk.
Perfect.
The hosts are always really awkward. Like, there's just so much. There's so much to it. And now, like, the actual acts themselves are becoming these huge spectacles. So, like, there's this whole now, like, staging entertaining side of it. But basically, ABBA originated in the Eurovision Song Contest.
They won for Sweden.
For Sweden, with Waterloo.
Ah, of course, Waterloo.
Of course, Waterloo. So, it was 1974, and this was them, you know, I think they'd only been going for a couple of years before that. The way it works with Eurovision is it's kind of a choice what language you do it in.
Okay.
You don't need to do it in your native language. You don't need to do it in English.
Uh-huh.
You can choose, and it doesn't really affect how well they do, to be honest. But obviously, ABBA chose this one in English. I think they did it in English. And then suddenly, after that, everyone, it just became so popular. I think it obviously got to number one in the UK. I think it got into the Billboard charts, like in the top 10 of the States.
I believe it.
You know what I mean? It is just pure.
Who knew?
It exploded.
Writing a love song with a bizarre metaphor about Napoleon as its structure would be
right?
The way into the hearts and minds of an international audience. I think it's more just they had a catchy beat, but
completely. And just like they just look cool.
Yeah.
But it's such a good, like, this, the thing is about ABBA is like their music is so iconic.
Yeah.
Like,
it definitely, that's a great word for it. Iconic.
It's so iconic. Like, I put it up there with like Michael Jackson, not necessarily in terms of
like quality.
Quality, absolutely. But in terms of just like sheer, you know what I mean? Like, there is no human, not even gay man or woman, there is no human out there who will not go, when they hear the of Dancing Queen.
Do you know, in an interview, Queen Elizabeth said that whenever she's at a party and Dancing Queen comes on, she always tries to dance because the song is called Dancing Queen and she feels obliged to give the people what they want.
Right?
The Queen knows Dancing Queen.
The Queen loves ABBA.
Well.
I think that's a thing, though. I think that's a thing. I know there's someone famous that... Oh, Nelson Mandela. That's what it was. Nelson Mandela said that ABBA was his favorite pop group.
That is... I don't know, like, this is an actual thought I have had on numerous times. I do not like ABBA, and I don't know if there's something wrong with me.
I think there's something wrong with you.
I think there might be.
I think it's because you're American. I don't know, but I wonder if that's a thing.
It might be a thing. And I do, like, talking about this kind of Eurovision European appeal, like, ABBA does have a very Euro sound, and I don't know if that's a chicken and egg thing. Because, for example, I would not qualify, like, the Beatles as having a very Euro sound.
Right.
I wonder, and I'm certainly no Beatles expert, but I wonder if that has to do with them kind of coming to America, and ABBA didn't quite do that in the same way that the Beatles did.
Well, I think for the Beatles, it was probably more, they were more rock and roll.
Yeah.
So they were getting the a lot of their sound from America anyway, but also like early Beatles stuff,
right,
is very Euro.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that. I'm trying to think, like, we're talking like disco time, so like,
yeah,
I don't know, the Bee Gees, like, there is an interesting like American disco sound and like Euro disco sound in my mind that are, there's a little different. Like the Euro disco sound is more like electronica influenced, and the American disco sound is more like R&B soul influenced. Certainly with tinges of each other. And like, don't get me wrong, I think Dancing Queen is catchy as F. You know, like, I have had Lay All Your Love on Me stuck in my head for like a week, and I can't stand it. But, and it, part of it, I also wonder if I'm like back hating this, if like my distaste for Mamma Mia the musical has seeped into my feelings about ABBA.
Oh God, that's such a shame if that's the case. But then it's one of those things, like with ABBA, just living in the UK, you grow up with it. You can't you can't escape it. I'm not sure how. I'd be interested to know from some of our younger listeners or some of our younger UK listeners, like, is ABBA still a thing for you guys? But like, you know, for me, it was always on. Like, you know, it'd be the one you're driving. You're on a long drive.
Right.
You put on ABBA.
Yeah.
ABBA, I mean, gold, get all the best. You know what I mean? Like
Dancing Queen, like, that's a song that I imagine plenty of, even American kids, have heard. You know, may not know where it came from, but, like, they went to a wedding once or had played at a school dance once. And, you know, Queen Elizabeth was in the corner at their seventh grade dance.
She was loving that dance.
Stood up for a moment to just, you know, poke her fingers in the air and do a little shimmy.
That's what she does. It's her token move.
But I do think, and granted, it's still played plenty long on Broadway, but the fact that it is no longer playing on Broadway while still playing on the West End, I think also speaks to a difference between West End musical theater and American musical theater, Broadway musical theater, but also speaks to a difference in the tastes of British audience and European audiences, frankly, versus yeah. American audiences, and even like the American tourist audience.
Yeah.
You know, I would wager it's why Jersey Boys found an equally similar success from an American standpoint as a jukebox musical on Broadway that I think Mamma Mia also did. I haven't actually looked at their opening numbers, so I don't know if that's the best example, but...
What do you mean opening number?
Like if... I don't know how long Jersey Boys played.
It's like two behind Mamma Mia or something.
Close enough.
Totally. It did really, really well.
Yeah.
And again, did really, really well in the West End, but Mamma Mia is still going.
Right, in Jersey. I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
Anyway. I think you're right. I think there is a slight difference in... Because it is very Euro, and we do love... Like, that's the thing, is I feel like everyone has a soft spot for ABBA.
Well, I also... Here. Yes, yes. And I think that the success of ABBA music certainly contributes a lot to the success of Mamma Mia. But I think one of the bigger things, which maybe we'll get to at some point, is because this is a weird jukebox musical with kind of a disjointed plot, there's kind of the Cats effect to it. Pardon me.
Right.
I know
okay.
I'm throwing all your shows under the bus. but like Cats is popular with an international crowd, and specifically was popular with a non-English speaking tourist crowd in New York.
Yeah,
because you didn't quite need to know the language to like get through it, and plenty of productions of Mamma Mia are translated, but like
loads actually.
But it because the lyrics of the songs aren't terribly important to like understanding the plot, the translation becomes less important, and
you can just enjoy the good tunes,
and like the level that the plot of the show exists at. Kind of caters itself to a variety of translations. Whereas, like, I think even something like Les Mis, it is a feat that Les Mis was accurately and appropriately translated from French into English. Like, found similar artistry in the words and didn't seem terribly clunky in a bunch of ways. And I, you know, that is a thing you see less often, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think I would agree with that. And I would fully agree with that.
Yes!
Well done.
I critiqued Cats in front of Jimmy and he agreed with me.
Yeah. No, but I think, I mean, we talked about that before. Yep, that doesn't make me not love Cats. I think that's a great thing, actually, that anyone can enjoy it.
Yeah.
I got you back. But no, like, you know what I mean? It's just a nice thing. And I think one of the things that links Cats and Mamma Mia is that it's just pure joy.
It's just fun. Yeah.
It's just so much, like, so much fun.
Which is fascinating. I went back and read a bunch of opening night reviews. And because I'm filled with cynicism for this show, I was so surprised. They were... largely positive and like largely positive in spite of a bunch of like very biting, very accurate critique about like, there's not a lot of plot. It's just a fun night at the theater, but man, is it a fun night at the theater.
Yeah, exactly.
Which that isn't usually the pattern that critics take, you know? Reviews for Footloose are very different.
For sure.
But I see a similar, you know, Footloose is also just kind of fun. So I don't know. I find like something about Mamma Mia like broke through that wall.
Totally. So gorgeous segue. Let's try and work out what did that.
We'll
It was Miley Cyrus.
It was Miley Cyrus.
I want to take that back. I didn't like that. I didn't like that. I just said that. So, yeah, okay. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that Mamma Mia has the most intricate plot in all of musical theatre. I'm not going to say that.
I might.
You certainly won't. You already have said the opposite about 12 times.
No, but here's the thing. I don't think... Okay, intricate's the wrong word. Complicated.
Yes.
And maybe not even complicated. All these things pretend they don't have the word nuanced attached to them. Like,
right.
The plot is confusing and frivolous. What happens in Act Two?
Frivolous, I will give you.
Yeah.
Act Two is lovely.
What plot points happen in Act Two?
She like grows to get to know her father's more. She has a lovely bonding moment with her mother. And then Donna finally decides to marry.
Yeah, okay.
I know this musical very well, so you're not going to be able to catch me out.
It's more here's, and I wrote this here.
Yep.
Like, when I was in college, I worked on Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Yep.
Among a bunch of other Shakespeare's, but knew two gents pretty well.
Yep.
Its plot, while not comparable in content to Mamma Mia, is kind of equally as frivolous in a lot of ways. I think a lot of, like, lesser Shakespeare's, so don't picture your Midsummer's, but picture, like, Winter's Tale.
Yes.
The ones that people don't do. The reason people don't do them is because the plots are confusing and a little frivolous, while being, confusing in their complexities.
Yes, and, winding.
Yeah, winding. That's a great word for it. And yet, you know, however many hundred years later, I have a complete works of William Shakespeare on my bookshelf right now, and am forced to study it in college. And so I wonder that about the Mamma Mia plot sometimes.
Tell you what, though, I'd rather sit through Mamma Mia than sit through Two Gentlemen of Verona.
That's true, because any second they're just going to start singing. But like, and I'm sure this is a bunch of questions that Mamma Mia 2 Electric Boogaloo will answer. But like, why do Donna and her best friends previously have a music singing career? Like, when?
Why not?
When did she meet these men? Presumably around
the 70s.
Greek. How did she get the Greek island? The grandmother of one of them left it to her when she was taking care of her. Was this before or after? What happened to her music career? What, like? But why
this
do
is
we?
It.
But
you have a sequel now.
I know, and like this is what they're gonna mine to create this sequel. But
yeah,
the only reason they have these plot points is because they needed to like create them to like make Dancing Queen an appropriate song to sing in this show.
Yep, and Super Trooper.
Yeah, the only reason the Dynamos existed is because there's a bunch of is because ABBA existed, and this is an ABBA jukebox musical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jersey Boys got around this by being a bio musical.
Exactly.
Whereas Mamma Mia just tried to be its own plot, and then
let's not get into the jukebox musical chat just now.
Fine.
we'll get there. Okay. Keep that soapbox at bay.
But
at the moment, let's just talk about the show. But yeah.
There is just enough plot to latch onto, and the rest, in what I will admit is a very musical theater way, is very hand wavy. Like, and who cares? And she
what met hand wavy,
and she met all these men, and who cares?
Oh, I see.
And they have, you know, lives off of this island, and who cares? You know, and we'll justify it away in a line a little bit, and who cares, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the plot is like that. And I think a lot of musical theater does that. I think a lot of musical theater that I don't like does that.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is something that is part of this art form, and I will accept begrudgingly.
Yeah, yeah, like it isn't, it's not the deep, you know, we're not, it's not this high art piece at all. But I think what it does have are some amazing moments throughout it. That is purely the root of its success. Like, I don't think it's just the ABBA songs. Mm-hmm. I think it's its content.
Really? Like what?
The ABBA songs, like, the ABBA songs are great.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that keeps people going back, because you could just listen to an ABBA CD. Why wouldn't you?
I
why wouldn't you just do that? Why would you keep watching the movie?
On default, not having thought up a complete justification for this in my mind, I would have landed on the flip-flop. I would have said the thing that this show has going for it are the ABBA songs. And that the plot is just a way to get you to the next song.
Yeah. Well, I think, for me, what I think is the ABBA songs get you in the theatre, and then the moments in the show are the things that keep you sat in your seat. Do you know if that makes sense? As in, like, stops you from leaving, is what I meant.
I mean, Pierce Brosnan standing on a rock attempting to sing almost made me leave the theatre.
Yeah, that's fair. Pierce Brosnan, different story. Retreat, we're talking stage. But right, so, right, just examples, case studies.
Kay.
Case studies.
Okay.
One of my old best friends in the world watched this movie every single week.
Wow.
With her mum.
Okay.
Went to see it any single time it was in town, which was a lot. Uh-huh. They would always go see it. It was their absolute favourite thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and solely because of Slipping Through My Fingers.
Really?
Like, that moment, and maybe it's because we're not women, but that moment, they said, is like one of their favorite things that they had ever seen. And like, she's a big musicals fan, like she's a big musicals fan, but there was something about that that she'd never seen before. That really pure mother-daughter relationship.
I will give you, I think of all the songs in the entire show, Slipping Through My Fingers is like the most content appropriate for its moment.
Yeah, totally.
And I think there's a spectrum of those songs in this show, and some of the other ones like Take a Chance on Me is like super content appropriate in its moment, but also not terribly moving because the content is not is like super surface level. You know, and then
Winner
like,
Takes It All.
Winner, well,
come on, you can't deny Winner Takes It All.
Like, that's a gambling metaphor. Like, so much of this pop disco music, you know, is not...
But that's fine. That's, you know, she's just taken a you know, you run with a metaphor.
But I...
Indeed, that's the song. But the content of that song and what that song means is pure storytelling.
Yeah, what they make that song mean. I wish they gave themselves permission to rewrite some of these lyrics. I wish...
Well, they did occasionally, but you can't... You can't change the Winner Takes It All because that's the song.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You can't change that because then it becomes something different. But I don't think it's one of those things. It's like, would you have wanted them then to have included a scene previously where Donna's like, I'm a card shark and I am the biggest poker star in Greece.
I mean,
and so the Winner Takes It All pays off at the end? Like,
they include a song where like Meryl Streep stands on the front of a boat with a gold gown behind her and has a bunch of like superimposed gambling references on it.
That's
and
very true.
I think it's really stupid that they do it, but they need to do it to make the song make sense. Like, I would much rather they make the song make sense.
But that wouldn't work for the... Because the whole thing about The Winner Takes It All is it is just this lovely moment. Like, kind of gambling metaphor aside, you know, you could talk about the fact it's gambling with love and gambling with feelings.
Yeah.
Like, which is actually what it's talking about. That's what the metaphor is. Like, I think it's totally fine and a really beautiful moment.
So what is Donna's subtext in The Winner Takes It All? What is she saying to Pierce Brosnan?
She's basically just saying, I loved you, we had this great thing, and you threw it all away. Are you happy?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say.
Okay. Like, it feels like she could just sing the song without the lyrics, like, just sing solfège over it. And it would have exactly the same meaning in the story.
What do you mean?
I think the lyrics of The Winner Takes It All in that moment, in that show, are inconsequential. There's tiny bits. But tell me, does she kiss like I used to kiss you? Does it feel the same when she calls your name? Somewhere deep inside, you must know.
Yeah, he's got a fiancé.
Right. Yeah, that's one stanza of like a 16-stanza song. The gods may throw the dice, their minds as cold as ice, and someone way down here loses someone dear. The winner takes it all, the loser has to fall. It's simple and it's plain, why should I complain? As... Bullshit pop lyrics.
By the way, Tommy, if I had it to hand, I would be able to find you equally bullshit pop lyrics from a musical that has been written for with a song that had been written for that show. Do you know what I mean? I could find you worse.
Yes, yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, absolutely, you know what I mean? They're not deeply rooted in the plot. But at the end of the day, what she's talking about there still makes sense in this context. Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's just, it's this love, it's this really nice moment that she just gets to kind of be like, listen, you've really hurt me. This, can you see, can you understand that this isn't fair?
And
like,
then
it says all of this stuff.
And then we wait three scenes before he's like, oh, by the way, I'm divorced. Do you want to get married? Like,
because it's a lovely, happy ending.
Right, and because we need to get there. Why doesn't he say it right there? Why isn't he like, whoa, 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 no. I came back.
Because she's just kind of smacked him, and then she runs amazingly up the hill.
Up the very long staircase and isn't out of breath when she gets to the top.
That thing is so iconic. Is that, but yeah, I really do think When It Takes It All and Slipping Through My Fingers are two incredible moments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, incredible moments, specifically Slipping Through My Fingers. There isn't really a good song like that. A good, like, lovely, beautiful, pure mother-daughter song.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That isn't steeped in, like, oh, we have issues as a mother and daughter, or, oh, I don't understand you, or, oh, our love is difficult. It's just, oh, I love you so much, and you're growing up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's plenty of things to be said about the witch's lament in Into the Woods, or
but
plenty
that's
of things.
Not that's not a lovely. You're not gonna. I'm not gonna be sitting there with my mom and be like, ah, no one knows what's out there in the world. Like, you know what I mean? That isn't a lovely tender moment. That is a dark moment, and then she like cuts off all of her hair.
Right.
Like, their relationship isn't a lovely mother-daughter relationship. Their relationship is a twisted mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
What you have with Donna and Sophie is a lovely mother-daughter relationship.
There is some purity there. I guess the thing that...
Absolutely.
The thing that bristles me so much is, like, that's... To me, and I wonder if this is my chauvinism showing, to me, that seems like an unimportant and uninteresting story.
Oh my god, that is your chauvinism joy. I think that's okay. A beautiful thing. I really do, because, I mean, like, testament to the fact that my friend watches it every week.
Yeah, no, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if they still do that, but, you know, for them, that was this lovely moment that they could share.
Yeah.
And then, like, when she went off to university,
mm-hmm.
like, that is what, you know, that is basically what this song is about.
Yeah.
And it just, like, to be able to have that resonance.
Yeah.
If, you know, you're including it in our musical theater world.
Yeah.
I'm totally down for it.
Yeah.
Totally down for it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is just some, like, really great tunes. Like, uh-huh. There's some really... And I'm not saying there's not duffers in there.
Uh-huh.
I think there are a couple of, like, twangs. But
yes.
For the most part, I think it's done really, really well.
Yeah.
Weren't expecting that one, were you?
No, I don't know if we can be friends anymore.
I know, that's two in a row. Oh,
oh gosh.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I do, like, I'm not coming at it saying it's like the better musical ever, blah blah blah.
Right.
But I think it does what it says on the tin.
It does, and I think I do think that that's part of its success. And I acknowledge, like, this musical's not for me. Like, not yeah. not like both as like I acknowledge that, like.
Yeah.
This is not for me from my own opinion, but also, yeah. like, I'm, you know, looking for that deeply heady, like, intense piece of theater art in every piece of musical theater, and this doesn't scratch that itch for me. Which then...
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Because we live in our, you know, dichotomous world, I must, of course, hate it with every fiber of my being, because if yeah. I don't like it, that's the only other option.
Exactly.
Which I recognize is an exaggeration and problematic, but we'll move past
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, so testament to just, like, how good this is and how much joy this show brings
mm-hmm.
Is the fact that post 9/11, it was the first show to open again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that tells you everything, because it is lovely mindless escapism.
Yes.
It absolutely is. And I really think there's a total place for that in the world.
That's
why I love cats. Like
that point, I will get on board with you too. And I do think I turn up my cynicism dial a little much sometimes with shows like this, but I like, people love Mamma Mia, and to bringing people joy is also a huge part of musical theater and theater making and entertainment.
Totally.
And to just go like to dive headfirst into that, in the thing that Mamma Mia does. You know, I absolutely enjoy that and acknowledge that. I think the thing that gets to me is like, I would wager that something like Hairspray.
Yeah.
At the end of the show.
Yeah.
People are dancing and grooving in their seats, leaving the theater like, man, yeah, wow, do I feel so happy, right?
Yeah.
But Hairspray also takes that opportunity to take you through this really happy story to throw some like really hard-hitting civil rights issues towards you.
Yeah.
And like, I want more theater that does that, you know?
For sure. Absolutely. And that's the thing, is absolutely, I mean, you know, you are preaching to the choir here, but I think there is a time and a place, and I think for it's one of those things, for us to have conversations with people about musical theatre, without having to go in and be like, oh my god, so this musical Ghost Quartet is really good. It's like set over all of time.
Right.
Etc. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas you can go and be like, oh my god, did you love Mamma Mia? That is so good. Like, you know, it's a way that I can go to the theatre with my mum and have an absolutely amazing time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm happy for situations like that to be created.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are some people who don't like to mix politics and theatre. Mm-hmm. I think it's one and the same.
Right.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I know you share that opinion.
Yeah.
But there are some people who, you know, they don't want it.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I want to go to theatre to escape. And that's totally fine. That's their choice.
For sure. It does and I'm going to be a little cagey here because I'm slowly working on a project and I don't like to talk overtly too much about them. I'm slowly working on a project with music written by a rock star. And one of the co-authors of the show goes to see a concert that this rock star performs in, like while they're working on the show. And talks very much about, like, man, why can't musical theater get the same reaction that an audience at a rock concert gets? You know, whether it's an intense rock concert or not. But just, like, from the moment the downbeat happens, people are just in love and all on the same page about this piece of art that's happening right now. And I think part of it does have to do with the like separation there, that like you're going to a rock concert and you're going to listen to music and you don't need to justify why you enjoy listening to music to people. Whereas like going to a piece of musical theater, sometimes there's a thought that like you have to justify why we go from one thing to the next, like why, you know, there's more content's the wrong word, but like, and even structure is the wrong word. I don't know, like through line that's just like built into the form there that like you can get away with not having at a concert. Not to say that it's not there, not to say that concerts aren't structured with, I think, equally as intense of a through line, but it's less overt and doesn't need to be quite as justified in the moment. Like,
yeah, I think I know what you mean. I think like there doesn't need to be as much intention behind going to a gig is going to the theater,
right?
Is that what you mean? Like,
kind of,
you like, set yourself up for it. Or...
Why, when we finish playing our third song and stop playing and start playing our fourth song, why did we start playing our fourth song? Because the third song was over, like, and that's it, and that's the only reason you need. Whereas, like, in Hello Dolly, how do we go from Put On Your Sunday Clothes to Ribbons Down My Back? Like, a lot of things have to happen right there to get us from one song to the next.
Right? Okay,
song.
I see what you mean.
Not that both sets aren't. Like, there's a reason we go from third song to fourth song in the rock concert, but we don't have to, like, extol that reason to the audience as overtly.
Yeah, it's just to do with RPM as opposed to...
Right, we had an upper and now we need a downer or whatever. Yeah. Or, you know, so-and-so needs to catch their breath, so this is an easier song.
Exactly.
But still, you know, and we've talked about this with sports, I think, a couple times too, but, like, the fact that these things can get... audiences so immediately invested in the thing that's happening. And Mamma Mia does that because it kind of capitalizes on this ABBA-esque concert-going feel. Totally. And I do think one of the reasons it's able to do that is because the plot is just consequential enough.
Yeah, exactly. It's, without being alienating and without being weird, like, it is simple enough that it's like, got it.
Yeah, and it's not like... Ya. We don't spend a lot of time being like, well, why did all these men leave Donna at various times in her life? And how did she get through this terrible moment of being a single? Like, we talk about it enough, but just enough, like with half of a hand wave, so that you've appeased any person who's asked that question. But we're not going to sit and like sing you a whole song about, you know, how difficult Donna's past was.
Yeah. Exactly.
But maybe we will in Here We Go Again.
Well, maybe we will. Cher's there too. Great. She leaves home in the early morning, waving goodbye with an absent-minded smile. I watch her go with a surge of that well-known sadness, and I have to sit down for a while. The feeling that I'm losing her forever, and without really entering the world, I'm glad whenever I can share her laughter, that funny. Well, I actually now want to talk about Donna. kind of going into what we were just talking about there, like, it is a simple plot, but I think there is a lot behind it, or certainly at least the world around it, there's a lot behind it.
Yeah.
First of all, has to be said, gets said all the time, so we have to say it as well. This was really important in terms of the history of musical theatre and representation in musical theatre.
Absolutely.
For being one of the first productions to be helmed by three women. Mm-hmm. So obviously Katherine Johnson written the book, Judy Kramer was the producer, and Phyllida Lloyd was the director.
Yeah.
And these gals were properly at the helm of this whole thing and making sure that it was something that was a strong and important piece of theatre that they wanted. I think it started off is Judy Kramer's idea. She, I think, was a producer on Chess.
Okay.
That
sounds right.
Yeah. And so it obviously worked with Benny Bjorn. And then Judy then approached Phyllida or Catherine. I think Catherine next.
Okay.
To be like, because, yeah, that's what it was, because Catherine had written plays before. She'd never done a musical. And she was like, I think you'd be great for this. And then I don't know how Phyllida came on board. But, yeah, basically this kind of dream team was assembled and working towards this. And I think it's so important that women were at the helm of this, because I think it could have been bad and very misdirected otherwise. And this all goes down to ABBA.
Okay.
So ABBA's a very kind of interesting band. So they were married to each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Who was married to who? I think Benny was married to Annifrid.
Okay.
And Bjorn was married to Agneta, I think.
You got a 50-50 chance. So.
We'll go with that. Anyway, so they were together. And obviously a lot of their songs are about love and the different natures of love and blah, blah, blah. But they were all very written from a male's point of view.
Yes.
And not the most, like, necessarily respectful male.
Yeah. Like, in the way that I think a lot of pop songs just kind of fall into, a lot of male written pop songs.
Yeah, exactly. And then it was just kind of a bit odd as well that at the same time their wives were singing them.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Bit strange. So The one that I always think about, and to put in the context of Mamma Mia, and why these women did such a wonderful thing with it, is they kind of flipped the script on a lot of the genders of who was singing what.
Yeah.
And the big one I always think is SOS.
Mm-hmm.
By starting that with Pierce Brosnan, I can't remember the character's name.
No, that's why I keep saying Pierce Brosnan.
Harry?
I don't know.
Is he Harry? I think... No, Harry's Colin Firth. Doesn't matter. Anyway, Pierce Brosnan.
Right.
Because who else do you hear?
Yeah. He really is definitive recorder of this song.
Exactly. He's then becoming this kind of like desperate character of want, you know what I mean, wanting her and trying to plead with her to like take him back, that I'm still wanting ya, hen. Mm-hmm. And just by adding that, it just changes the script a bit. It stops it from being like, oh, I'm a sad woman and I just want love. To a completely different viewpoint.
Yeah.
And I read an interview recently. It was one of the guys who played Harry on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just when the show was closing.
Yeah.
And he was talking about basically the fact that he's really happy that he gets to play a bit part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this show, because that's what the men are.
Mm-hmm.
They're just foils.
Yeah.
Whereas normally that role is filled by the women.
Yes, and like the rest of musical theater.
Pre
Mamma Mia.
Totally. So traditionally that is, it's how it's done.
Yeah.
Whereas the gals have totally flipped the script on this.
Yeah.
And have put these really strong women at the core.
Yeah. And in like moving and like important songs like SOS, and also in like Does Your Mother Know, which is just an upbeat tuner to like get us out of a sad song into another sad song, and we just need a moment to laugh in the middle, but still flip the script. Because like isn't Does Your Mother Know, isn't that sung by Bjorn, perdoname, but a male voice, right?
I think so, yeah.
And flipped in to be like a really powerful bit funny women's song.
Totally.
And like throughout this, that happens over and over and over again in the show in like big important ways and like not important ways too. And I think the not important ways then become equally as important.
Yeah, totally, because it's relentless. It's just like it is, you know, like I think another one is Lay All Your Love on Me. That's another one where he's just like, I'm devoted to you.
Yeah, right.
Hey! You know what I mean? It's like, great.
Yeah,
just,
exactly.
Like, that's, it's just so nice to see that relationship where the guys are just, like, really into their women.
Yeah.
And the women don't have to be fighting for them all the time.
Right.
They're just
And loving it. There's not, like, it would be so easy to put in, you know, women fighting for the attention of the same man in this show.
Yeah, exactly. One of those scripts. Yeah, three women going for one, get some of that.
Right. Like, totally. There's a whole... And, like, even as written, there's a million places you could slot it in, but it never happens. And that's so... You know, it's such a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. Now, this is something that I want to kind of discuss with you, is I've seen... Obviously, there's a lot of talk about Mamma Mia because of the film, which is great because it means we can really do a lot of research.
Yeah.
But there's kind of two camps.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from female authors.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got one camp that is saying the women in the show are just really broad. Mm-hmm. They're kind of graphic.
Yeah.
A bit gratuitous and not very... ladylike, shall we say. Then there's another camp who are saying like, this is a bunch of normal women.
Yeah, absolutely, this is a bunch of normal women. Can we go through the history of musical theater? Picture Guys and Dolls, like, Luck Be a Lady Tonight, the title song, when you meet a guy, he's probably whipped that he's doing it, like, men in musical theater have been equally as crude and lewd for forever. why can't women be? And like, I think even crude and lewd is hyperbole. Maybe in both camps. But yeah, that's so is powerful and important, and like speaks to the themes of this show. Like, you know, she doesn't get married in the end. As a big old FU to like, why are we falling into this traditional thing when it's not for us? And, you know, wasn't for my mother. And, you know, and like when we spent all this time getting ready for it, but screw that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many moments of just like FU to tradition in general. Like, there's no, you know, the fact that Sophie's like, oh, well, don't know who my dad is. That's fine. I'll just have three dads. And everyone's like, yeah, sounds great.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
However many times, like, Christine Baranski's like, because I don't know her name either, you know, whether talking about her five husbands or her plastic surgery, and like, you know, get it. Yeah, you do you. Like,
absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Screw the rest. And like, I think it is... I find it almost insulting that some of those plot points seem revolutionary, because if you flipped the genders, they would be like so boring. But it took this long for maybe not any piece of art, but a musical to put some of these things forward and give, you know, this is certainly a girl power show in a big way.
Yeah, totally. It really, really is. And it's great because like, you know, I see my mum, for example, hanging out with her pals and having a great time.
Yeah.
It's all this chat.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's all this chat. And I think that's so good. And it, you totally get why these groups of women are going and loving it. Because I do think there is this element of like, finally, I get to see myself on the stage. It's not this like beautifully, perfectly poised and presented, you know, aspect of a female.
Yeah.
That nobody can actually really relate to. It's just, you know, three women making dick jokes.
Yeah, exactly. I do
love it.
I do wonder, so I have this question for you, because I'm running through this in my mind, in this show, how many relationship moments are female initiated, if that makes sense.
Are you talking Bechdel?
No, I'm not actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking, so like, there's lots of talk that like, Sophie's kind of in charge of the wedding with Skye. She wanted this big white wedding. She's also the one who like might call it off and then does, you know, not uncall it off and then recall it off, right?
Yes.
You know, in Does Your Mother Know? You know, certainly, I don't know if that the character even has a name.
He does. It's it begins with a T, I think.
Right. The boy.
It's like Tommy. Probably
perfect, great name. But like, while he might be the initiator,
Pepper,
yeah, like Tommy. You know, you just start calling me Pepper now. That's fine.
Yeah.
I was gonna say things about Christine Baranski. But like, while Pepper certainly initiates, Christine Baranski certainly has the power in that song. I do wonder then if Pierce Brosnan asking Donna at the end if they want to get married is the right ending for this show. Like, could you tweak it just a little bit somehow so that Donna can ask him?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But then I like the fact that it's just in Donna's hands, and it is just very...
I guess that's true. She gets the chance to say yes or no.
Yeah, because it's not the sweeping, like, da-da-da-da-da, and the only option she has to do is say yes.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
It is, in fact, totally unexpected.
Yeah, she's almost like... The way she says it is almost just like, why the hell not? Yeah. Like, which it is, it's not like... Oh, yes, I will. All my dreams have come true.
Yeah.
It's just like, let's keep singing ABBA.
Exactly. Well, yes, that too. I do think that's important. I think that's also the power, you know, how many musicals end in a wedding. But most musicals that end in a wedding, you could probably watch the first 15 minutes and point at the people you think are going to be married at the end of the show.
Yeah.
And with Mamma Mia, you'd be wrong.
Exactly.
Which, you know, there is something...
And that's the nice thing about this, is that it doesn't end with a wedding.
Right.
It just ends with a girl going off and having some great independent times away from her mother. Like, it's You know what I mean?
I think the show ends with a Megamix production that ends in Waterloo.
Very, very true. That's because, what I meant.
Because, and I am convinced of this and have yet to find supporting evidence, but I think when they were writing, they were like, all right, we found a way to get the song Mamma Mia in. We found a way to get the song Dancing Queen in. And they're like going through ABBA's like top hits and they're like, oh God, we got to put Waterloo in somewhere.
Yeah.
How do we, oh, do it like, do they hang a picture of Napoleon on the wall? Like, how are we gonna? And then like, you know what? Just put it at the end. Just, it'll all be done and then we'll sing Waterloo.
I mean, but that's the thing is, I'm like, by that point, you're totally ready for it. Because you're like, come on!
Yeah, exactly.
When's Waterloo happening, please?
Yep.
You know? So I'm fine with that. And I'm glad they didn't try and shoehorn in some French battle. It is in the sequel, though.
Oh, well, who knows?
Narratively.
Maybe when they travel back in time, they travel all the way back to Napoleonic time.
No, they don't. Dang. I don't think it works. But the singer of it, I really love. Weird coincidence, he was also in the London production of American Psycho.
Very weird coincidence.
Very weird coincidence. We made that happen again. That was us. But yeah, so I think that's, again, another one of the reasons why I like this show is because it is doing a lot of things that other shows, you know, aren't doing. And it's something that is totally accessible.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's great. I really do want to read this quote because I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
It was from an article. Can't remember where. Sorry. It'll be in the show notes. So it says, it, meaning Mamma Mia, posits a transgenerational pansexual paradise that's so deeply queer that when one of the characters come out of the closet late in the movie, the revelation seems superfluous. We've just spent the last 90 minutes singing ABBA while line dancing on docks in snorkeling flippers, and you're telling us you're gay? Big whoop.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
I love that. I do think, and like, there are plenty of problems I have with the show, but my biggest one is that Bill
I think that's Harry
whichever one comes out. I hate it. It's like a gay, it's a gay joke. I hate it so much.
So I know what you mean, but also it's not as severe because it isn't like, and I'm gay singing a song about being gay.
I guess that's
it's
true.
Just like, oh, by the way, I've got a partner and he's here. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is exactly as that says, where it's just true. Like, I'm gay, by the way. And people are like, wow, I'm off to just sing Dancing Queen.
Right. It's like, have you noticed everyone here is shirtless and covered in water already? Like,
exactly. You must have had a great holiday.
It like. Looks like a scene out of a gay club already. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
So I actually think it's funny because like back in my self-hating homophobic days, I remember that happened. I was like, of course, I'm a gay character. Do you know what I mean? Like, just like, sure.
They're always after sitting through all of Mamma Mia.
Exactly. It's like they're everywhere. So yeah, but you know, but, like that's so silly. But now I'm like, yeah, stuff it. Why not? That's great.
Yeah.
That's totally great. And it isn't.
I do enjoy that it is not like, and now I will sing Dancing Queen. Right?
It's no gear European.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Thank God. Okay. You've convinced me.
Great.
About that point.
I'm doing so well. Slowly but surely, I'm going to make you like everything.
God, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and there's going to be a VHS of cats like sitting on my coffee table. I'm going to be like, where did this come from? And like, I'm going to hear like a British tee-hee-hee from Andrew Lloyd Webber as he like swoops out of his with his cape down the hallway.
Exactly. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. It's also how Andrew Lloyd Webber laughs. So.
Yeah, I think it is. So yeah. So Mamma Mia. Oh, well done.
Oh, fine. Can we talk about jukebox musicals so I can be angry again?
Yes, sure.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Yeah, I know. It's so tricky. It's so, so tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we are in an art form of adaptation. You know?
That's all. Yep.
And like, so then where do you draw the line and how do you create your borders? And you can't, clearly. But I wish, I don't know. And like, Jersey Boys is an interesting foil for me because I don't enjoy Jersey Boys either. Particularly.
Oh, interesting.
I find it interesting.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it, actually. I saw it on tour in Chicago. With like, it was like over maybe December time, and so they were like, they were running like 5 swings. Everyone was on their own holiday break,
right? Okay, yeah.
And so like, a lot of the show was kind of a joke to them too, which peeved me a little bit. Because I was like, come on, I paid money to come see this, but that's another story. Structure wise, I enjoy Jersey Boys as a structure. I like the music. I am just kind of against it as a concept, which I know is an awful standpoint to have. I think I do sit in these standpoints because a lot of musical theater is a zero-sum game, and for every Mamma Mia, for every Jersey Boys, for every SpongeBob, that's one fewer Great Comets or, you know, whatever is going to happen next. I think that is where some of my perhaps unjustified mild rage comes from at shows like this. I'd much rather another Great Comet than SpongeBob, per se. And because there are only so many theaters on that dang street.
Although, you can't count SpongeBob in this discussion.
True.
Because it's not a jukebox musical.
True. But
Donna Summer, the musical.
Donna Summer, the musical. Beautiful. Yep. And like, these became a thing. Like, Mamma Mia launched a genre.
But so this is the tricky thing, because you've already said 3 that I regard as like things I really enjoy. Like,
yeah,
I really enjoy Jersey Boys.
Yeah,
I loved it. I saw it on the West End and I thought it was incredible. I didn't really know any of the music,
right?
And I saw it quite early on as well. So I hadn't even like listened to the Jersey Boys cast recording.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? To get to know Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons' music.
Right.
So I kind of went into it as if it was just a show.
Yeah.
And it totally worked. And the music was amazing. And
yeah. And the book's kind of good. Yeah. No, I agree.
The book is really good. Like, it is the one that I always say, that is my favorite jukebox musical.
Yeah.
I really, really loved it. Yep.
I do very honestly think, and I've been trying to unpack this in my brain for a long time, I do think, perhaps like my irrational hatred of Andrew Lloyd Webber, I have a very much irrational dislike of
it's just an instant
jukebox musicals. Yeah.
I think so. I think it's something I would share with you just because it is starting to saturate the genre.
Yeah.
There's more jukebox musicals now than there ever have been. It's that kind of like, there's a great infographic that I'll put in the show notes.
Yeah.
Kind of showing the different genres of musical theater being produced.
Mm-hmm.
And like the jukebox musical one just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right. I think that, I think that's it. I think it is a macro dislike, is that I don't particularly dislike any of these individually. and could absolutely point to the things that I like in them that I also like in other pieces of musical theater.
Yeah.
But I intrinsically like more original art more. I think it is more creative, more unique, more purpose created. Like, I think that it is possible to create a musical that is just as popular and just as fun and just as catchy and just as successful as any of these jukebox musicals originally. I think it's a little more difficult. I think it takes a little more commitment to art. And that also, in my brain, like, increases the quality of it. And I know that this is somewhat of a fallacy in my mind. It's like when bad rehearsal processes put out good products. And that, like, you don't want to like the good product because you know the rehearsal was bad, but that still doesn't make the product actually any worse.
Yeah.
It fits in the same category in my mind that, like, I know these things are, like, incongruent somehow. But it is, I think it is something I will consistently be trying to unpack. And I will say, I don't, like, different from my dislike of Andrew Lloyd Webber, I'm not terribly alone in this particular feeling. Like, there are plenty of people who equally don't enjoy jukebox musicals as a concept.
Yeah, totally. And I do agree, because I think there is an element of laziness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing is, you know, when I go to see something that's completely and utterly original, this has been created from scratch one.
Right.
You know, based on an idea, it's not based on anything whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that is very rare, and it is very difficult to do, particularly with a musical.
Yeah.
To do well. But when that happens, I'm just like, holy moly, this is incredible, because you've pulled this out of nowhere.
Right.
Like, you've kind of shuffled through the fabric of time and everything that makes up everything and managed to pick out this.
Yeah.
Completely of your own volition.
Yeah.
And that is just so impressive.
Yeah.
So in that own right, it's like, well, already you're onto a winner because you've done something that's really amazing.
Right.
I feel a jukebox musical, because it's using this music that is already known and loved.
Right.
Right? For me, you're actually starting further back.
Yeah.
You know?
I think
you're already...
I think that's filled with caveats. And I think this is a reason why I like my macro dislike for this. Because it depends on how much care you then put into the story you're going to put around that thing.
Exactly.
Jersey Boys,
that's what I'm meaning.
But like but the problem is we're now watching this pattern develop, and because jukebox musical, even I would wager in Mamma Mia's world or in Jersey Boys' world, maybe not from the author's standpoints, but probably from the producer's standpoints, does come out of some laziness there.
Totally.
Now, people are seeing that. People are seeing that that's popular, and we get Escape to Margaritaville.
Yeah, exactly.
And that makes me nervous for my art form. My art form.
And that is what I was meaning, is that I'm, you know, they're starting a lot further back, and therefore I'm going in being like, you've got a long way to go to impress me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I go in to see an original, I'm already impressed.
That's fair.
Do you know what I mean? You're up on a stage, I'm already impressed right now.
Right.
Whereas with them, I'm like, I know all these songs, so what else have you got?
Yeah.
That's what I'm kind of waiting and seeing.
That's true.
And then very rarely do they have anything for me there.
Right. Can they bring you back from there? And, like, I do think the other problem that, like, some jukebox musicals fall into is, like, you know, it's the reason people saw Bruce Springsteen on Broadway. It's another excuse to go see this concert, and so you don't really care about that extra stuff that you want to see, right?
Yeah.
There are plenty of people who went to see Mamma Mia just because they like ABBA songs. And hopefully they were pleased and delighted by the wonderfully written, nice in-between pieces. Did you see all those nice things I said about this musical there?
That was really nice.
Thank you. But, like, if that stuff was daft or stupid, they might not care as much.
Yeah, totally. For example, We Will Rock You.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, We Will Rock You is just puns.
Yeah.
And Britishisms.
Yeah.
Laced around Queen's music.
Exactly. Like,
that is literally all it is.
Yeah. You know, maybe,
and yet,
maybe
they
to
lat it up.
Exactly. Like, maybe to a lesser extent, but even like All Shook Up. which has a
yes.
decent book, but only decent. But yes. it's Elvis songs. How can you not like Elvis songs, right?
For the record, by the way, I really don't like Elvis.
So, you heard it here first, everyone.
I really don't like it.
Don't come at me about my dislike of ABBA and forget that Jimmy doesn't like Elvis.
Right? but they're I Can't Help Falling in Love.
Mm-hmm.
Great. The only reason that musical should exist.
Yeah.
But yet, for example, we've just had started on Broadway Head Over Heels.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is the Go-Go's.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was like, so I saw it today and I was like, okay, this is interesting. And it looks like it's just there to be like Camp and Fabulous.
Yeah. And like
I genuinely, I can't see the other point. And I know I just said earlier, like, it's great to just go to the theater.
Right.
And enjoy that. I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I do. I want more.
I think there is another, like, a part that's missing that I'm really struggling to articulate. Mm. I do think jukebox musicals create a different kind of book. And I mean, mm-hmm. like, capital B book, like the story mm-hmm. of the musical beyond just, like, the words between the music.
Yeah.
That is lazier and less interesting and, in my mind, if you don't mind, less artistic. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's easy, I picture someone out there listening to this and is like, well, Jimmy and Tommy just don't like pop music, which is not true, but also...
It's absolutely not true.
But also is a thing to fall into, or, you know, the musical theater audience doesn't like pop music and doesn't like pop music coming into
exactly.
the musical theater.
Like, but, I was a mm-hmm. pop music fan before I was a musical theater fan.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all sorts of pop music. But I do think, like, on the topic of jukebox musicals, have you ever seen Crazy for You?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Such a stupid book. Very funny in moments, but mm-hmm. stupid and unimportant and uninteresting and, like, even less so than the kind of Mickey and Judy Save the Animal Hospital movie that it's, you know, taking inspiration from. And
yep.
I think that style of writing happens when you come at a show from this direction. Because you're no longer asking the question, which comes first, the music or the lyrics. You're now asking the question, how do we create a frame that's going to exist around these songs we want?
Yeah, totally.
And it just makes for a different kind of story writing that is filled with, like, bits of unnecessary frivolity that really, like, they push my buttons in a bad way when I watch theater.
Well, it's one of those things. I think you kind of start to hit on a good point there where, you know... Cole Porter was doing this shit in the 30s.
Right.
Like, that was the very beginnings of music and theatre.
Yeah.
So why is this something that we're still doing but yet hasn't been perfected?
Right. And I do...
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Why are we still making these shows that are cobbling together a yeah. plot
and
that isn't working?
That still
it's been going
weird.
On for 80 years.
Exactly. And, like, you know, Crazy for You came out before Mamma Mia and wasn't called a jukebox musical because, you know, I think mostly because you don't listen to Gershwin songs on a jukebox.
Well, that's it. They're standards as right. opposed to the collection of an artist.
Right. But, like, conceptually, it still came to be in the same sort of way.
Well, yeah, the songs weren't written for Crazy for You.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And, like, I don't like that either. And, like, those early Cole Porter musicals, with all the names that I'll never remember, are equally as fluffy and stupid. And I didn't, you know, I don't like them either, right? For whatever this difficult-to-define reason is, which is perhaps less adjacent to my fear of jukebox musicals pushing out the original art from Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I do think there is something else, something in between the lines, in the weaving of these sorts of things that really does put me off. Or, like, not push my buttons in a way that even something that's super adapted, like Wicked, still I'm very much okay with. Because book, music, and lyrics yeah. were co-conceived at the same mm-hmm. time.
there is just, there's like, yeah, there's a certain level of artistry that you can see has gone into it.
I totally agree.
But it's one of those things, they make a fair buck.
Yeah, they do, and they keep plenty of people employed, and you can't say no to that.
Yep. So that's the thing, they're not going to stop.
Yeah.
In fact, I imagine they'll just get more and more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I wonder if we will see a dichotomy at any time, if like jukebox musicals will start separating themselves out, or like if, you know, they will ever be uneligible for Tony Awards in particular ways.
I can't see it happening. Like, it's I've just come up with this analogy in my head, but I feel like jukebox musicals are like the cornstarch. No, not the cornstarch. Jukebox musicals are like the oh, bugger. What's that sugar called? The really bad one.
Hydrogenated corn or
No, what is it? What is it? It's what is that? You know what I'm talking about. Bad sugar in foods. High fructose corn syrup. That's it. So I feel like jukebox musicals are the high fructose corn syrup of the musical theater genre. They are easy to churn out, they're a lot cheaper to make.
Yep.
But they're very comforting and they give you a lot of gain back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But they're probably bad for the food industry as a whole.
As a whole, yeah.
And the way it works, the way it worked with high fructose corn syrup is people are now starting to catch on to the fact that actually it's really bad for you and it causes obesity.
Which, so you know, escape to Margaritaville's closing. Like,
it is. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
But, you know, Head Over Heels is just opening. So,
right.
And then Cher show's coming in a couple of minutes.
Yep.
Like,
which I've heard good things.
Well,
who knows, but
they also said good things about the Donna Summer musical.
That's true.
That it opened, so
yeah.
I have heard good things about Jagged Little Pill, though.
I've heard fabulous things about Jagged Little Pill, but at least that seems pretty original. Like, this is another like distinction I want to make. Like, I have nothing wrong with, say, Chess, you know, not particularly.
The Jagged Little Pill is the music of Alanis Morissette.
Is it? I thought it was more original than that.
No.
I'm now less excited. You have sucked the excitement out of me, Jimmy.
But then it's weird because, like, I'm a big fan of Alanis Morissette, so I'm like,
I know,
sure, I'll take it.
Well, and like that I'm sure is why I've heard great reviews of the Cher musical, the Cher Experience.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's the thing is, I feel like there probably actually are artists out there whose music would translate quite well to a stage.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Kate Bush.
Yeah.
Right? Now I'm a damn dirty Kate Bush fan.
Right.
And her music does have a sense of drama to it.
Yeah.
And also a sense of narrative to it.
Yeah.
I guess that's the other thing. What about concept albums? What about your American Idiots of the world?
Do those count? Well, I do think it has something along the lines of, because like I would put American Idiot, you know, which I would even put less in a concept album world than something like Tommy or, you know, heck, Evita. These things that have started off as big concept albums, but at least they have the stage somewhere in mind with their conceit.
I don't think American Idiot ever did. I think it was just because that is a kind of feature of rock.
It has performance, you know, like in mind.
The Pink Floyd have done it.
Yeah, but at least American Idiot was its own self-contained album. It wasn't like Green Day's Greatest Hits the musical.
Yeah.
You know?
So, because that kind of through thought was already there.
Yeah. Because of the time it was composed, too. Because, like, Green Day kind of made albums like that, along that kind of thing. But then I do also wonder, like, what about something, you know, why don't we have more waitresses? Sarah Bareilles, pop music icon, famous for her own music, just write a musical, you know? Mm-hmm. Come into this world.
Well, interestingly enough, so we have, I don't know how much he comes onto your radar, but we've got Gary Barlow over here.
I don't know Gary Barlow.
So Gary Barlow was in Take That.
Okay.
who, big British band, uh-huh. definitely came over to your side for a wee spell.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Finding Neverland.
Oh, okay.
Then he wrote another musical called The Girls, which is based on Calendar Girls. Don't know if you've seen that.
Yes, I think I've listened to The Girls too, as well.
Oh, right, great. Yeah. So he wrote that. Mm-hmm. He's now just written a musical called The Band, mm-hmm. which is a jukebox musical of his music.
Interesting.
And I'm like, this is an interesting folding here.
Yeah, like we're kind of breaking out of the category in a weird... Which, like, this is also the problem with musical theater categories anyway. Like, our sample size is so tiny for all these yeah. things. It's hard to pull any patterns.
But Gary Barlow's come out and has said that he actually doesn't really like jukebox musicals. And he also thinks they are quite lazy.
Yeah.
And so he's come at The Band uh-huh. from a point of view of... I don't want to make this a bad jukebox musical.
Right.
And I've heard, like, pretty decent things about it. The story is all right.
Yeah.
But again, in a similar vein to Mamma Mia,
yeah.
like, it's basically about a group of young girlfriends who I think are just huge big fans of Take That.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's about how they kind of grow up
yeah.
and how their lives have changed together and things, you know what I mean? Just like a nice...
Right.
sisterhood camaraderie. And I feel like Gary Barlow has been quite smart there, because the biggest fans of Take That
are the people who are going to see those characters in themselves.
Exactly, like 30s to 50s women.
Yeah.
So by writing a musical that is yeah. specifically aimed
yeah.
you know what I mean, with them at the center of it, that's just smart.
Yeah.
And you know, he's done interesting arrangements of his own music,
right?
That, you know, so they're I think there are lots of grey areas
yeah.
in the jukebox musical world.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jimmy Buffett, Escape to Margaritaville can get to absolute F because it's not adding anything. It's
no.
not adding anything to the pile.
Right. Yeah. It's not.
Do you know what I mean? Testament to this fact. Did you... I don't know if you've seen the side-by-side by Susan Blackwell with Rona Lisa Peretti. I don't know her actress name. That's so mean. You're not gonna know.
No, I'm not gonna know, but we could look it up.
Let me just look it up. Yeah, Lisa Howard. Mm-hmm. So she did a side by side by Susan Blackwell
mm-hmm.
with Susan Blackwell. and she's in Escape to Margaritaville.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so bad because they barely talk about the show. They're yeah. literally like, oh, it's so fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, so other stuff.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because you're like, you can't even, like, yeah. you're in a show and you can't even say, you can't even sell it.
Yeah.
You can't even bullshit it.
That's it's an article I have in my research file that I bring up when I'm doing projects on other things. But it's about originality in musical theater. And I wonder if I can find it, we'll put it in the show notes, because it's from a while ago. But it is, they interview a couple cast members of the Footloose musical who are talking about, like, they got into this thing and were like, you know, this thing's not original. And like the book of the Footloose musical is not good. It's like actually kind of poorly written. Mm-hmm. But the show did really well in spite of some like real poor reviews. And it is interesting to see the cast members of the show like not rallying around their show, but still being like, but you know, it's popular and it's paying my bills. And I'm not, you know, raring to get out of it anytime soon. It's like it's like whenever Fred Flintstone, you know, puts the bird's beak down on the record player and the bird sits up and goes, ah, it's a living. Like, that's, you know, that's some of our Broadway actors now. And that sort of thing, that makes me sad on the inside, right? That's a thing that I think adds to my macro distaste for jukebox musicals.
Yeah.
Is that it's not... often, you know, I don't think everyone involved in Mamma Mia was like, yeah, ABBA music, it's the thing we need to bring to the people, you know.
Well, I don't think Mamma Mia is the one to be picking on right now. Is all I would say. I think there's better examples. But yes, I would say that there probably have been some actors and some cast to do that. Like, for example, one of my friends, I'm not going to name any names.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's just finished the tour now. Was on a tour with a jukebox musical. And when she was staying at mine, just kind of talking about, like, I mean, it's nothing special. Like, exactly. Right. Like, it's nothing special. Like, paying the bills. She was like, please don't come see it because you are going to hate it. Like, there's nothing to enjoy.
I guess that's...
And that makes me sad.
It's like, my frustration with humanity. It's like, why can't you just like the art? You know, it's really how I feel. Like, why can't you just like the good art? And clearly I understand there's a million problems between the beginning of that sentence and the end of that sentence.
Ugh, I know.
But still, I just want them to like the art, Jimmy.
I know.
And instead,
but people need to keep making the art.
It's true. It's true.
And they need to stop making the chart.
Yep. Make art, not chart.
Is that our first piece of merch?
I don't know if I could wear the shirt to work, but
some people could. Just saying. So yes. Anyway, what I'm excited about is all the discussion that I hope that we will have about this. Because it is.
Yeah.
Some people are like, you're a big old dirty snob.
Yeah. No, that, and I will accept that, and I am.
Yeah, so am I, to an extent. I think maybe not.
Not to my level of snobbery. Not to your level of snob.
You're in the box. I'm in, like, the grand circle. But yeah, you know what I mean? Because I, like, there are things that I do love, because, you know, like, almost like guilty pleasures almost.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Actually, Mamma Mia isn't it? It's just a pleasure.
Yeah.
But... You know, there are some people who will be like, I hate all that arty pish.
Mm-hmm.
Give me
Jimmy a Buffett. Man After Midnight.
Beautifully done.
Thank you.
So good.
It's going to be stuck in my head for months now.
I mean, why the hell not? It's incredible. Madonna sampled it.
Yes.
Madonna?
True.
Madonna.
The thing I am most excited about, Jimmy, is I am not the person in the world who hates ABBA the most. The person in the world who hates ABBA the most is... Empty Room, my yellow text friend from various pieces of Watch With Me on Musical Theater MASH, hates ABBA. For years, we joked that we were going to bring her into a room to tell her that we were going to watch something else, but instead put ABBA and then put that video up on the channel. Unfortunately, that plan has now popped. But I'm going to visit Chicago very soon, and we're going to go see Here We Go Again.
That's so exciting. But you're not going to tell her? Did she listen to this?
She doesn't listen to this. I think she'll figure it out. but we're going to do it anyway. We went to see Twilight 2 together. It'll be like that.
I fully support that. I think I'm going to love it. I've seen a lot of clips.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about going to see it.
Do you think Meryl Streep is dead? This is my question.
Yeah, what the hell's going on? Why does she not? But also, actually, in a weird way, I'm like, well, mad respect.
Yeah.
You're not being like, Meryl Streep and Cher, Meryl Streep.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure this was like a day of shooting for Meryl Streep.
I'm sure that's it. And it's like in the script for that reason.
And here's your $4 million check.
Right.
But I don't know how people get that. That might be a lot or not that much.
I have no idea.
Here's all your money.
Yeah.
But I quit into it that they're not like, you know, Cher. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, she's there. Of course she's there. Yeah. Donna.
It is an interesting... It does seem, like, based on the promo and the posters that I've seen, it is interesting to me that it seems like they went to great lengths to get everyone back, but also aren't paying them to be in the whole movie. Like, Pierce...
Yes.
You know, like, there's a whole flashback scene, so we don't have to pay Colin Firth and Pierce Brosnan. Like...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
But still they're in it. Like, instead of just completely writing them out.
But I love that.
It's an interesting choice.
Pierce Brosnan apparently had singing lessons. So, you know, Tony?
Probably. They're going to be like, you know what? It's a movie, but we'll give him a Tony anyway.
We'll give him a Tony because it is an original musical. Right. Why the hell not?
God, can you imagine this? Like, there have been circuitous routes in musical theater world before, like Hairspray, movie to musical to movie again, but to go like musical to movie to movie sequel back to stage musical.
Yeah. Now, because the only other time that I think that has ever... Oh, no, it didn't start as a stage.
Hmm.
Well, there you go.
What were you going to say?
was Shock Treatment, which is a sequel to Rocky Horror.
Yeah, but it started as a movie, didn't it?
But it started as a movie. Yeah. So there you go. And I actually don't think Shock Treatment ever came to the stage.
And I don't think Mamma Mia 2 is going to come to the stage either.
I don't either. I mean, the thing that I love about it so much is that they're repeating songs.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going
to
be...
Because they're like, well, you have to have Mamma Mia again.
Right. Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Exactly.
Wink, wink, wink.
And just like, it's almost like in a cool, like, musical theater dramaturgy way.
Yeah.
It's almost like when Donna sang it in the first Mamma Mia, mm-hmm. it was actually like a kind of Merrily We Roll Along style reprise because she'd already sung it.
We're seeing the whole show backwards. I do.
Genius.
Can I tell you, I think one of the strangest things for the show, and like I get it from a like long distance looking at an art squinty kind of way, but like mm-hmm. up close analyzing the details of it, the mm-hmm. main plot points of the show are like Sophie trying to find out who her father is. It's called Mamma Mia.
Yeah, man. It's about the women. Gives a shit about those men.
True.
Tommy, that was Mamma Mia. You did it, pal.
I survived. I made it.
That's Evita, Mamma Mia. What are we going to do next?
I don't know. Like, we got all the ears again. Going. Can I do... We didn't...
Did you just say we've got all the ears going because Evita...
Mamma Mia.
Just things that end in A.
End in Ia.
Evia?
I was never very good at math.
English? Wow.
Do you know what my favorite part of the Mamma Mia movie is?
Is it a Frozen?
Nope, although that's a close second. My favorite part of the Mamma Mia movie is the Greek chorus, but not the Greek chorus, but the chorus of Greeks.
Yes.
Who show up during Money, Money, Money.
And in some ways are also a Greek chorus in that moment.
And in some ways are also a Greek... They are a Greek, exactly. Greek chorus.
Yep. They're great. There's some great moments
they're
in that.
So funny.
So good.
Yeah.
And actually, the choreography in the stage show for that number is really good.
Mm-hmm. The choreography in the movie is tolerable.
Damn right. Hey!
You have a quiz... This one's a statement, too.
This is equipment. It's equipment. Tommy, you're going to like this next show.
I'm so excited.
Okay. This has been a long time coming.
I think so.
Mm. Okay. So here, interesting equipment, guys. Me, Jimmy, fought tooth and nail to get a line in this next show that we're going to be talking about. I've mentioned it on a couple of previous podcasts. And that line is, "This'll wake them up."
Wonderful delivery.
Thank
Clearly,
you so much.
You can see why you did get the line eventually.
Constantly nailing it.
I do also think the content of the line very much gives away the subject matter of the show.
Absolutely. It's all there. A lot. You know how you were saying with Hello Dolly, all hinged on the curtain seller?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This all hinged on worker.
I know you said curtain seller and meant wallpaper hanger, but that's fine.
I just see like a bar. You said there was a bar or like a pole.
I am amazed with how vividly you remember all of this story.
But is that right?
Nope.
Oh. I must have turned like,
nope.
Wallpaper hanger. What were you?
Wallpaper hanger. You said
wallpaper
curtain hanger.
Curtain hanger. And in my head, I heard hanger, which meant bar, but I've since put curtains on. That's how that works.
Oh man.
Also, just like, it's Hello Dolly, there's probably curtains like you could, you
know. Everywhere. Yeah, it's true.
Anyway.
If you want to get in contact with us, I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube.
And I am Azin Hendrix on Twitter, and our show Twitter collectively is at Jim and Tomic.
So is our website, jimandtomic.com, which has a link to our Patreon where you can support the show, and our Reddit discussion where you can talk with Jimmy, and I do read the comments. I just, you know, don't have fingers, exactly. So can't type.
I'll honestly get some great discussions.
Yes.
I just love it.
Yeah.
Yes. Please tell your friends all about it. Feel free to go and drop us a little review or just even a teensy old star rating. Wherever you listen to your podcast, it really helps us a lot.
Absolute Amundo.
Okay. And we shall see you next week.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Adieu. Great.
Awesome.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.